Hey there, welcome to Motorcycles and Misfits here in the Recycle Garage in sunny Santa Cruz, California. Woot, woot. So this is a special episode to the Patreon subscribers out there. I want to say thank you very much for contributing.
Thanks, guys. Yes. You guys rock.
So we're going. I hope you enjoy this bonus content. My name is John Dalton, and I'm sitting here with Liza Miller.
Hey there.
And Emma.
Hello, darlings. Did you say you have boner content, Jonathan?
I think so. I have boners content. I have a contentious bonus all up in here.
So I wanted to start a new little segment called Emma Explains.
Well, before we go into that, I wanted to try and explain to you guys, the Patreon subscribers, that subscribes the dedication of Liza, because she's sick. I'm looking,
not sick as hell, but
no, I mean, like she's a phlegm factory right now.
She's like, hey, we need you to take this over. I'm like, oh, okay, here we go.
Exactly. So this is dedication above and beyond, Liza, and I know how much you love our Patreon subscribers, as all of us do, but you know, you're really going the distance today, so thank you. Now we can get into what I'm doing.
Thanks, Emma.
You're welcome.
You know, I realize I'm always bragging about, you know, my Super Duke. It came with a slipper clutch.
Super Duke!
And I'll admit, I really don't know what a slipper clutch is or how it works, though I do know when I ride that bike, I can ride more aggressively.
Yes.
Into a corner and engine brake harder and worry less about losing traction.
Uh-huh.
And I assume this is due to the slipper clutch, and
it
this is the advantage. So I thought, you know what, let's take some time. Why don't you explain not only what a slipper clutch is, but all the different types of clutches out there, and why people choose, or not just people, but you know, the manufacturers choose these different types of clutches. So let's build our way up to the slipper clutch.
Okay.
What would be the most basic common clutch of old times?
Right. So let's get down to brass tacks. What is the clutch? What does it do? So if you consider the engine of your bike, and the engine of your bike or any other bike is basically, it's a big air pump. It sucks in air from one end, it mixes with fuel, makes combustible material, goes into the combustion chamber, ignites the fuel, pushes a piston down, and then there's a crankshaft that converts reciprocating movement of the piston into rotary movement, and that's what gives you power. And then it chucks all the excess gases out the exhaust pipe. That's it. That's all an engine does. You can make it as complex or as simple as you want, but that's basically what it does. So you've got all this power coming off the crankshaft. You need a way to harness that. You can control the speed of it, and to a certain extent, it's power with the throttle. But you need a means of putting it to the pavement. Now, if you have an engine that produces power at a fairly narrow band, and when you're talking power, you're talking not that the engine's running, it's when it's producing its maximum amount of power. And as we all know as bikers, that tends to be higher up in the rev range. If your ride is two-stroke, you might only have power at about 1,000 revs, from like 6,000 to 7,000. You know, a four-stroke, a more sophisticated four-stroke like the Super Duke. Where's your power come in, Liza? About 7?
Everywhere, man. Everywhere.
Ah, yeah. But there's definitely a favorable place to be in. A bike like your Virago, Jonathan,
it's really low.
It's really low. But nevertheless, you've got a fairly narrow band to play with. So if you want to be able to use this bike from 0 miles an hour to 150 miles an hour, you need a system of gears. So first, second, third, fourth, maybe fifth, sixth, whatever. The clutch is that link between the engine and the transmission. The power of the engine drives the primary gear, which drives the clutch, and then it goes into the transmission. And basically, you can regard it as it's an on-off switch for the transmission.
Mm-hmm.
When your clutch lever is pulled in, you've disconnected the drive to the transmission. This is very, very basic stuff. But once we understand the concept of it, we can understand how and why clutches work. So to go back to Liza's question, the most rudimentary clutch, and the one that's still widespread in the car industry, is the single plate clutch. So if we consider a disc, and on a motorcycle it's probably about 6 inches in diameter, and it's covered with a friction material. And a friction material is very similar to what you'd find in maybe a brake pad or a brake shoes, if you're used to the old school. And on one side of the friction material, there is a smooth face, which is attached to the flywheel of the engine. And on the other side is a smooth face that's on a moving plate. When you pull the clutch in, the plate pulls away from the friction material, and so it can spin. The plates can spin freely and the friction material stays put. When you let out the clutch, the plate grips the friction material and spins the transmission, and then you're off.
So the sound you're hearing is John rubbing his hands together, because he's actually miming all of these motions that Emma's describing.
So picture it as a sandwich. It's a sandwich. And when you pull in the clutch lever, you lift the bread and look at look at the bologna inside.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Okay. So I've ridden and then not popped in the clutch and then just popped it up and it goes right into gear.
You can do
that. The clutch keeps that transition smoother. Just kind of
lifts
it up, puts it into a different groove almost.
Right. Exactly. It assists. You're not going to be able to pull away from a standstill smoothly without a clutch. You can do it, but it's very, very convoluted. Mm-hmm. So a clutch really has two jobs to do. The first job is to enable you to shift smoothly between gears. And usually that's very, very quick, in, out. The second job, which is where the real technology comes in, is to enable you to pull away from standstill smoothly. Because it has to be progressive enough that it doesn't just bite. You've got to be able to slip it a little bit in order to pull away.
I have to admit that this is one of my favorite challenges. When somebody has a bike that either the lever or the cable has broken on the clutch and they're prepared to leave it on the side of the road, I'm the first to volunteer and say, I got this.
Yeah.
You can ride a bike without a clutch.
Mm-hmm.
Takes a bit of a challenge. And famously, one time a bunch of us are doing a breakfast ride and Doug's... his DRZ 100, I think the clutch cable broke. And I said, I got this. You guys go on to breakfast. I'm going to ride back home. And the trick is you get it started in neutral. You get it moving. Kick it into gear, hit the gas at the same time so you don't stall it.
Right.
And you're off. Now, I did pretty good. I was able to roll through stop signs. You know, I could get it down into first and be going pretty slow. However, there was a couple stoplights that proved to be tricky. You either had to start doing circles in the street or where there was too much traffic, I'd have to just go around the block and again and see if I could time it. Just keep going around the block, time it just right, and I did manage to get that bike home. But yeah, it is a challenge I'm always up for.
Right. So...
So it's probably easier to get your bike home in England with the roundabouts.
Right,
would
exactly.
Be
yeah. Exactly. So the single plate clutch is a very, very simple design. Usually you will find, can you find single plate clutches on motorbikes? Yes, you can.
What's an example?
BMW is a good example.
Really?
Yes.
Now, most BMWs or...
Yeah, most BMWs. Moto Guzzi or another
That's
one.
Because it has the drive shaft and...
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. So, if you... usually a dead giveaway If your bike takes engine oil, hang on, I'll back up. If you have a bike that the crank runs front to back, which basically means a flat twin, a V-twin, flat four, whatever, and it has separate transmission oil, it's usually a dead ringer, you've got a clutch, you've got a single plate clutch, and it's going to be like a car clutch, it just runs in air.
Wow.
It's a dry clutch, it's separated from the engine. So, that's the most rudimentary one. The most common clutch you will find in a bike is a multi-plate wet clutch. And there's a variety of reasons.
Jake's got one on her Nighthawk, right?
Most of us have.
Of us have multi-plate wet clutches. It's the most common form. And the reason, there's a couple of reasons for that. A multi-plate clutch, you can build more friction material into a smaller area, so it's less susceptible to wear. It's as simple as that. If you consider that 6-inch diameter, okay, single plate clutch, so consider how much friction material that has on it. Now, the friction material is what actually grips and makes you go down the road.
I have noticed the difference between my my R1200
right
and my Virago. The going into the another gear,
yes,
with the BMW, you feel it when you're going to the
other one. Absolutely. It's a lot sharper.
Yeah.
But for the same size, so if you've got one plate, now consider if you've got five plates. You've got five times the amount of friction material. It's going to be a lot more resistant to swelling. It's going to be a lot more resistant to wear and tear. It's going to be a lot more resistant to fade. And we're going to talk about fade in a minute as well. Because a wet clutch is incorporated in oil. And usually, in the case of a Japanese bike, it's the same oil as the engine. And the reason for that is, every time you let the clutch out and pull the clutch in, you're engaging and disengaging drive, and there's a little bit of slipping going on, and that produces heat. And the hotter a clutch gets, the worse things go, because the friction material itself can get burnt. But more importantly, in between the friction material, there are steel plates, and they're pretty thin. And if they get warm enough, you can warp them. And usually a giveaway, when you pull, let the clutch lever out on a bike, and it kind of and it judders as it pulls away, you've probably got warped steel plates. So they incorporate it in oil to keep the temperature down.
And this is a good time to mention why you don't use automotive oil in your motorcycle.
Absolutely.
Because of the additives in the oil for cars where the clutch is separate. And that's why you have your transmission fluid and what
exactly.
have you.
Exactly.
And so there's lubricant in the oil for the engine.
Yes.
That is bad for the clutch plates in a motorcycle. And that's why you get motorcycle-specific oil.
Right.
Here's my question for you.
Yes.
Back in the 60s and 65, maybe whatever, there wasn't as much specific motorcycle oil. Were those, a lot of the motorcycles then dry clutch, or did they just wear out? Did the clutches just wear out?
No, the oil wasn't as sophisticated back then.
It didn't have the additives that it has now.
The oil that is our enemy. It is the additives within. And the saddest irony of that, these additives are preserving car engines. You know, if you went down to the Chevy dealer in 1965 and bought yourself a brand new Corvair, you'd be lucky if you got 60 or 70,000 out of that engine. And it's not the engine's fault. It was just the lubricants that were around at the time.
Yeah.
Part of the reason that we can buy cars now and drive them to 300, 400,000 miles is not only the engines are a lot more sophisticated, well, that's just great, but the oil is so much more sophisticated too. So where were we? We're multi-plate clutch.
Let's get to...
encased in oil.
Let's get to then... dry clutch, because I've owned a Ducati.
Yes.
But I do remember when I was much younger and I encountered my first Ducati pulled up to a traffic light, and I was quite surprised that the owner of said motorcycle was not aware that something was loose on his bike. And I leaned out the window and say, "Hey, you have something loose. Can't you hear that?"
Yeah.
Yeah. That was, I think most people, first time they encounter a dry clutch Ducati, like, you think something's broken on it.
It does sound that way, doesn't it?
But why do they use the dry clutch?
The reason they use the dry clutch is the materials they use in that clutch to give it the kind of feel they want will only work dry. It's as simple as that.
Now, and when you have a dry clutch, usually the clutch cover has holes cut in it.
Yes.
So that it can vent. I was told that for racing that you can keep it cooler, a dry clutch cooler, when it's vented like that and it's not in the engine's hot oil.
Absolutely.
So because
think about racing conditions. I mean, what we do here on the street and what happens out on the racetrack are two extremely different animals. And airflow on a racetrack is something you can use both to your advantage and disadvantage. And in the case of a dry clutch, you can use it to a huge advantage because the chances are on a racetrack you're doing 100 miles an hour. And all that beautiful cool air rushing over those holes in the clutch are going to keep it cool. On the street, it's a very, very different animal.
So the dry clutch is a more progressive clutch.
Yes.
Which is interesting because you'd think that would be more basic than the oil filled. Now, do people do dry clutch conversions?
No.
On bikes? Is this kind of unheard of?
Yeah, it's kind of unheard of. It'd be so difficult to do. Certainly on a Japanese bike, the clutches now are so integrated into their respective transmission holes. It'd be a nightmare to try and turn them into a dry clutch. It really would. I really couldn't see how you could do it easily. And there really wouldn't be that much of an advantage. Bear in mind, the power characteristics of a Ducati may not be the same power characteristics as an R1. So, you know, you'd really have to want to do something very, very different to turn a wet clutch into a dry clutch. For 99 times out of 100, wet clutch is going to do you just fine.
So basically, if you're talking anything from a Harley to a Honda, they're all going to have similar clutch styles.
Exactly. It's all multi-plate. Friction material, steel, friction material, steel, friction material, steel, 5 or 6, maybe 7, 8 times. Mm-hmm. It's encased in some kind of oil. In Harleys, the oil is separate from the engine oil, but it still runs in oil. Mm-hmm.
Let's get up then to the evolution. Is the slipper clutch, is that the most a forward or advanced clutch?
It's one of the more forward-thinking ideas.
So explain it to me. How is that slipper clutch different?
It's extremely simple design. So what I want you to consider is, I want you to consider, let's take an example, a 10-plate clutch.
Okay.
It's got 10 friction discs. Mm-hmm. 8 of them work in a very, very conventional manner. So, I know John likes to visualize this. I want you to imagine.
I need to borrow some hands.
A gear on your crankshaft driving a gear on the clutch basket, which is the main component of the clutch. And there are slots in the basket that engage with slots on the friction discs. So basically, when you spin the basket, the friction discs spin.
I have to interject. I'm a bit distracted by the... Basically, John Dalton is once again trying to gesture.
What?
And looks like he's fingering an invisible girl.
He does look like...
Well, I mean, in some ways, I mean, the basket or the,
right,
you know, the hole or whatever is around the outside, and then we're going inside.
We're going inside.
We're
going
to go like a little bit...
He did it again.
You also have to go around the edges and the walls.
Okay. Yes.
And then when you're putting those things inside... Anyway, eight of the things are good.
I'm going to have to excuse myself. So anyway, so the basket is driving 8 of the 10 clutch plates. The steel plates are connected to the inner part of the clutch. Now, the inner part of the clutch is a drum. I call it the clutch spider. There's various other words for it. You can call it the clutch drum, but that's connected to the transmission, and the steel plates are keyed to that. So the engine drives the basket. The transmission is connected to the clutch drum in the middle. Steel plates, right? Very good. So now we get to the last two friction plates, and the last two friction plates live on the very outside of the clutch basket. Oh. And then the clutch drum is split into two halves. There's the main clutch drum that takes eight of the steel plates, and the last two steel plates are contained within the very outermost portion of the drum. And there's a ramp. So basically, when... How can you put it? When the clutch is under duress, which basically means that the engine is shut off on power and the transmission is still trying to push the bike along, a ramp bears against itself and disengages the clutch a little bit. It's a fiendishly simple design. And what happens, you say, well, hang on, wait a minute. The clutch disengages itself, so the drive is lost. But as the drive is lost, the pressure on the clutch basket, on the clutch spider, is lessened because you've lost the drive. So then the ramp can slide back under itself and engage the clutch again. It's very, very difficult to
sort of like a freewheel on a bicycle.
Almost,
when you're
yes.
not. Yeah, when the pedals are not engaging, then it'll, and the speed changes, the wheel can roll on its own.
It's almost like a freewheel on a bike. Yeah, it matches it, and it's very, very progressive.
It's a clutch for the clutch.
It's a clutch for the clutch.
That's cool.
It's a
clutch for the clutch.
Fiendish
yeah.
design,
wow.
and it's extremely simple. It's just a system of ramps. Of diagonal ramps cut at about 45 degrees into the clutch spider and the outermost end of the clutch spider, you know, the clutch end cap itself. Mm. And it's exactly what it's for. So when you shut that power off, theoretically, if you shut the power off on the engine and it duresses the clutch basket, it disengages itself.
So is it's like a starter clutch?
Almost.
Where the starter clutch, people don't know, when the starter engages, the engine will push the clutch, but as soon as the engine, the starter pushes the clutch, but as soon as the engine takes over and starts turning faster, then it disengages.
Exactly.
Because they're basically little
rollers
at an angle, so that when it starts turning faster, it's hard to explain.
Right,
yeah.
And it's exactly the same system. That's a great analogy, Liza. But take out the rollers. It's just angles cut. What I will do is the next time I build an R1 at work, I'll bring the clutch in and I will show you a slipper clutch. It is fiendishly simple. Oh. It's one of those things that you think, you know, it's going to blow your mind. But there's absolutely nothing to it.
So what bikes come with a slipper clutch?
Well, the R1's an obvious example.
Yeah.
I believe some of the CBR1000s are coming with them now. It's your Super Duke has one, of course.
Yeah.
A couple of Ducatis have them. It's a sport bike thing.
So is this the next evolution? Do you think more and more bikes are going to have slipper clutches? Kind of like how ABS is the next evolution. And now you're seeing it on something like a little 300 has ABS.
No. Because it's like ride-by-wire. It's perfect on a certain kind of bike. But it's not actually great for everyday use.
So it'd be wasted on everyday use.
Right, exactly. If you're the kind of rider who's riding close to the red line, jamming your bike down through its gears and stuffing it into a corner, it's perfect.
Yeah.
But the majority of us don't ride our bikes like that. Mm-hmm. And they do feel different. It's a learning curve to ride one. If I'm riding in a sedate fashion around town, I don't want a slipper clutch. I don't need a slipper clutch. I don't need that technology. I don't need that slightly woolly feeling that you get sometimes with them. conventional clutch is just fine. For track day, of course, it's perfect because it's virtually impossible to lock up the back wheel on downshifting.
Right.
And it's the same with a ride-by-wire system. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to... If you've ever ridden a bike with a ride-by-wire, this is where they dispense with the throttle cable completely. Basically, your twist grip's a potentiometer, and it works on an electrical cable down to the fuel injection system. It's a very strange, peculiar sensation. Very, very odd. And I'm not sure whether I like it. And I have to try and figure out whether I don't like it because I'm being a reactionary old woman, or it genuinely takes control away from me. And I think that's what I'm getting at with the slipper clutch, is anything that takes direct control of the motorcycle away from me, I'm not entirely for it. I much prefer a manual transmission car to an automatic transmission car. And I much prefer, by the same token, a manual transmission bike to an automatic transmission bike. We didn't even get a chance to talk about those today, did we?
Well, see, and I find it interesting because I see it much like ABS brakes. It's there when you need it.
It's there when you need it, but...
But it's getting used when you don't need it.
Yeah, and, you know, it's kind of a crutch. I would hate to... put a novice rider on a bike with ABS stickers on it and say, oh, this thing's got ABS. And so he overbrakes on a wet road thinking the ABS is going to save him or her. Because it ain't. There's no substitute for machine control.
All right. So in beginning to wrap this subject up, I figured this would be a good opportunity. Most people, including myself, will ride a bike beyond the point when the clutch needs to be replaced. You feel it start to slip
yes.
on the freeway. So can you quickly, let's do like an Emma's top tip, describe how somebody knows when it's time to replace their clutch?
Well, there's a couple of things that you need to know. You're going to get that slipping. And a good way to tell whether your clutch is toast, put your bike into fourth gear at stationary. And bring up the revs a bit to like 1,500, 2,000 revs. And let the lever out gently. If your bike stalls, your clutch is okay. If your bike revs and tries to pick up, your clutch is toast. Mm. The second check, which is completely fail-safe, is smell it. Take out, if you've got a wet clutch, as most of us we've already established do, take out the dipstick. You know, the oil filler hole, and smell. And you will smell a burnt clutch. And this is something I cannot stress highly enough. If you fry a clutch in a bike, change the oil immediately. Flush the oil immediately. Mm. Because the contaminants in the oil from your fried clutch will kill your engine quickly. It will destroy a crankshaft in 5 miles.
Right, because the clutch is made to have friction and your engine is not. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, and so all that friction material debris that's now in your oil stinking up the joint will get into the oil passageways of your engine and destroy it from within.
Mm.
So
it's like having a little glass.
Yeah, it's a little sandpaper going right. through your engine. You know, I had a very, very dear friend many, many years ago who did... very high-end restorations on BSAs. And obviously the frames were powder-coated and everything. And BSA's got a separate oil tank. It doesn't carry its oil in the engine. It carries it in a separate tank. And I saw him one day, and he was sanding this oil tank down and, you know, getting the spray gun out, saying, why don't you ever powder-coat the oil tank on a bike? And he goes, oh, no, you never powder-coat an oil tank, ever. Because if you do, in order to have something powder-coated, you've got to have it sandblasted first. Mm. No matter how well you mask, if you get one or two grains of sand in that oil tank, your engine's done.
Wow.
So from that point forward, if you see one of my restorations, the frame may be beautifully powder-coated or stove enameled, everything on the bike, never the oil tank. The oil tank is hand finished. Mm-hmm. I have to sit there with sandpaper, get it back to bare metal, and get my spray gun out and shoot it in black because of sand in the oil. And it's the same with your clutch. If you fry that clutch, change the oil straight away, 100 miles down the road, flush it, change it again. Mm-hmm. Do not take risks with your engine with that clutch plate material. How about that?
Very nice.
Excellent.
Very
That's
nice.
A top tip.
Mm-hmm. That is Emma's top tip. And that is all about clutches. Thank you, Emma, for explaining
You're
that.
You're very welcome.
And thank you to all of our Patreon subscribers. We hope you enjoyed this bonus content. Stay tuned for more, and thanks for listening.
Light, as I said, boner content.